the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 6th of April, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com, of course. And today, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. And this is inspired by Nat Dainlaw. You may remember a week or so back, he talked about going back to basics. And he was talking at that time about the importance of ethno-nationalism being about ethnicity, and that we need an organic nation-state based on ethnicity. But the actual term, back to basics itself, reminds me of some things that I'm often talking about. The fact that white has to mean white, the fact that we can't have any Jews, the fact that perversity, homosexuality, that cannot be tolerated, and also no usury. Now, everyone hears me say these things, but I thought it might be good to go into the reasons why they are so important, so people can use them for arguments when they're trying to bring people around to our point of view. We are trying to recruit people, we are trying to change the behaviour of whites so they realise who they really are and what they're really capable of. And the first one that I want to deal with today is why white has to mean white. Now, I know a lot of people may say, oh yeah, but everybody's a little bit mixed. Everyone's got a little bit of a percentage of non-white in them. Well, that's just complete nonsense. White people are white. Any country that has is made up predominantly of people with a slight admixture is going to end up looking like India, is going to end up looking like Egypt, it's going to end up looking like Iraq, Lebanon, all these countries where they were originally white and then their blood got adulterated. So white people today are white, and white has to mean white. And the reason why people think that there are a large percentage of people with admixture in their blood is from these DNA tests. The DNA tests that people take. And often they'll get their DNA test back and it will say something like 0.5% African or 0.5% Ashkenazi. Well, anything under 2% is within the margin of error. They don't actually know what that is. It's too small for them to actually tell. So they just make a guess at it. And on top of that, they would also like everybody to think that they are mixed. So they just make a guess at it, and people get really shocked, and they say, oh my gosh, I'm a tiny percentage Ashkenazi Jew, I'm not white, that means everybody else must be a little bit mixed as well. Therefore, we can tolerate having non-whites in the movement, and we can just breed them with people that are predominantly white, and that will lighten them up, and eventually they will blend in. And that's not actually possible, because DNA tests will show if somebody has non-white blood in them. If you've got this amount that's under, as I say, if it's under 2%, then it could be the margin of error. But if it has been a case of non-whites trying to breed themselves white, then it's entirely accurate. But you would know, because your family tree would know that they had Jews in the family tree or they had blacks in the family tree. So if you end up getting a DNA test back and it says you've got 0.05% Jewish ancestry and your grandfather told you that there was once a Jew in the family, then yes, that does mean that you have got a tiny percentage of Jewish blood. But in the absence of that, and if you don't actually show any Jewish traits, then the likelihood is that that is an error that's been made by the DNA testing company. So white has to mean white. I mean, this is what we are fighting for, is to preserve the white race, preserve white people against the genocide that's going on, the replacement of our people, and the miscegenation. And if we tolerate any amount of non-white in that, then that is corrupting. That is corrupting us. It means that if they are tolerated, if they are treated as white people, that means it's acceptable for them to have a white partner. If they have a white partner, that means that the children that they have are going to be of mixed race. Even if it's just a tiny amount, they are still going to be of mixed race. So we cannot tolerate having non-whites. But at the same time, if people have had a DNA test and they've got under 2% of non-white blood, but they don't actually have any history in their family tree of non-white blood, they don't actually have any knowledge of anyone in the family tree, they don't show any of the traits, then the likelihood is that they are actually white. And we have to hold to this ideal. We have to hold to the ideal that white has to mean white. I mean, that is what we are trying to preserve. As I say, if we don't preserve it, then we end up with a country like India. That started out white. And when the Muslims invaded, they destroyed the caste system. And of course, we know when Muslims invade any country, they rape all the women and turn them all into Arabs. That's what the word Arab actually means, is mongrel race. You can look that up in a Bible concordance. Just look up the word Ereb, and it will tell you that it means mongrel race, and that's where the term Arab came from, and that's where the country Arabia was named after. It was named after the mongrel race that lived there, and the roots of the word are something that darkens. So it's actually talking about the skin darkening when people adulterate the blood. We know that when white people adulterate their blood with Negroes, they lower their intelligence, they lower their IQ, but it raises the Negroes' IQ. So Negroes, it's in their best interest to try and breed with whites if they want to be more intelligent, but it means that they will lose their distinct ethnicity, but they don't really seem to be that bothered with that. And when you do have this adulterated blood, what you have there is a hybrid. You no longer have a pure race. You have a mongrel. And if the mongrel is allowed to breed with the pure breeds, then it just turns them into mongrels. And you have thoroughbred racing horses. If they get interbred with just a normal shire horse, then they're never going to be a racehorse ever again. You know, you've got the same with pedigree breeds of dog. They can't be interbred with any other type of dog because you just end up losing the pedigree. You end up with a mutt that shows all different kinds of characteristics, all kinds of unbalanced temperament. And when we have these mulattoes, they do have an unbalanced temperament. And you cannot have two masters. A dog cannot have two masters. And a mixed race person is going to be torn in two different directions all the time. It's going to be like having a split personality, like a schizoid personality. And there's going to be essential parts of the white man's psyche that are going to be missing. And there's probably going to be essential parts of the black man's psyche that are going to be missing as well. Because you don't get a smooth blend when two races interbreed together. You know, what you get is it shatters the DNA. And I can't explain this in the scientific terms, but I can explain it in allegorical terms. It shatters the DNA code. So you would end up with black bones, but white, fair skin, maybe fat, puffy black lips, but a Caucasian type nose. You don't get a smooth blend of the features. They end up shattering. And that also means that in further generations to come, you could get a throwback where you got somebody that looked 99% black, even though the two generations before looked predominantly white, because those genes for creating a Negro will always be there. They just get diluted down a bit, but they will always be there. And the the potential to for that to happen, for this throwback to happen, will always be there. And that's why you, sometimes you see black couples and they give birth to what looks like a white child, or you end up with white couples that give birth to what looks like a black child. And what has happened there is two, three or four generations back, maybe longer than that, there's been some mixing, and everybody else since then has tended to look predominantly like one type. And then you've just got like this googly that's been thrown at them, which is the throwback to the time when the miscegenation first occurred. So we cannot allow non-whites into the movement. Also, how can you have non-whites speaking for white people? It's saying, well, we're not good enough to do it ourselves. We're not good enough to have white people speaking for us. So we're going to have non-whites speaking for us instead. And the most popular one with this is to have Jews speaking for us. This is what's always gone on. And Jews have got a very good verbal dexterity, shall we say. That's why they succeed in the media. That's why we have so many of them, as well as the nepotism that goes on. And of course, Jews employ other Jews and do what they can to help other Jews. So there's that as well. But Jews do have a verbal they are on the average better with their verbal dexterity than white people are. So that's even worse is when you have a Jew that's supposedly speaking for white people. Because this is what we're fighting against, is Jews constantly telling us what public opinion is, Jews telling us what our history is, Jews telling us everything on our television sets. We certainly don't want Jews to be telling us what's right for white people in white nationalism. White nationalism has to be for white people. Jews have their own nationalism. They have Zionism. It's a shame that Zionism there's two different types of it. I mean, some people can look at Zionism and think, well, this is Jewish nationalism. Yes, of course, the Jews should have a homeland. Just, it's unfortunate that it happens to be on the Palestinians' land, but yes, of course, Jews should have a homeland. And it would be hypocritical of me to say that they shouldn't, because I want a homeland for white people. So I support Zionism. So some people may think like that. If you look at the wider picture, though, then you can see that Zionism means international Zionism, which means every nation that Jews reside in has to be turned to the purpose of doing what's best for Israel. So you have international Zionism and you have national Zionism. And when you get the likes of Tommy Robinson or Anne-Marie Waters saying they support Zionism, what they are talking about there is they support the right of Jews to have their own homeland. And I support the right of Jews to have their own country. I support the right of everyone to have their own country. It's just unfortunate that, as I say, that it's on Palestinian land. And we know that if Jews become a part of any movement, it doesn't have to be nationalism. It could be just in the government, just in the education services, in the media, whatever they do, they will always do what's best for Jews. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, they have a sense of ethnic solidarity that, sadly, we don't seem to have anymore. But a large part of why we don't have it anymore is because the Jews do their best to undermine ethnic solidarity wherever they go in the host nations that they live among, whilst doing everything that they can to enhance the ethnic solidarity among themselves, among Jews. They are always Jews first, and then citizens of whatever country it is they reside in second. And they will always do what's best for the Jews. And if they are allowed to be a part of nationalism, they're going to do the same in nationalism. They're going to suggest that we support Zionism. They're going to suggest that we support Israel. They're going to suggest that we allow Jews to interbreed with whites. And Jews themselves are a mongrel race. And they like to put across this total fantasy that they have kept their blood pure. But all the way back, we go back in history, ever since the term Judean was actually used, ever since the term Jew was actually used, we find them mixing races. And you can go back to 200 BC and you can read in Flavius Josephus about how the Judean nation interbred with the Edomian nation next door, which was a Canaanite Arab nation. And by the time you get to Christ, you got a large percentage of that nation were mongrels. On top of that, you also had proselytes of justice and proselytes of the gate, which were foreigners that moved to Judea and became Jews. So it was, there was none of this, oh, you can't interbreed with other races. That was completely encouraged to 200 years before Christ and up to the time of Christ. Of course, then we hear after that, 1,000 years after that, we hear about how they moved into Khazaria and they interbred with all the Khazars and they absorbed the Khazars and the Khazars became known as Jews. And then they moved into Europe. And we end up with the European Ashkenazi Jew. At the same time, we've got the Sephardic Jews, we've got the Ethiopian Jews, we've got Chinese Jews, we've got Jews of all these different races. They are a mongolized anti-race. And there must be something diabolical that going on there as well, because as I said earlier, when you look at what happens to white people, if we interbreed with Negroes, our IQ gets lowered. And the ability to be a cohesive nation falls apart. You just become Arabs. Whereas the Jew, when he interbreeds with other nations, his diabolical ingenuity remains. I mean, they have on high a very, on average, a very high IQ, and yet they are completely mongrelized. And you would think that the traits of the Jew, that the miscegenated offspring of the Jew has, would get diluted over time, but they don't, which is why you end up seeing people that are, say, 1/8 Jewish that show very, very heavily Jewish traits. Think of people like David Cameron with slightly adulterated Jewish blood, and he's there in Israel paying his obeisance to them and saying he wishes he was fully Jewish, bending over backwards for them, and introducing homosexual marriage to Britain, enforcing that on Britain, and also opening up the gates to immigration, while at the same time saying, well, we've got to promote the Holocaust and we've got to look after Israel. All these very, very Jewish ways of looking at things. Liberalism, the modern day liberal, is entirely Jewish. It promotes all these Jewish ideals of feminism, race mixing, homosexuality, individualism, pornography. Allowing all of that has now become associated with liberalism, because liberalism is just a code word for Jewish ideals. Liberalism before, years ago, I mean, the liberal arts used to be what people would study about civilization to become a citizen. If you wanted to be a citizen of the Roman Empire, you'd have to study the liberal arts. Alfred the Great, he wanted the inhabitants of Britain, the Anglo-Saxons, to study the liberal arts. And it meant that somebody was educated, whereas nowadays it means that somebody is degenerate and they advocate for the rights of the individual over the rights of the state. So we can't allow Jews in any way, shape or form, because they will just take over the movement and they will dilute it. And Jews are at the forefront of the people trying to get rid of nationalism. They, as I say, they do all they can to undermine the ethnic cohesion of the nations in which they live among. We see this with their control over the media here in Britain, where they're feeding our children a completely false history, where they're telling our children that we had Negroes here in the Roman Empire. They're telling us that famous kings in our past were Negroes, famous queens in our past were Negroes. They've recently said that Joan of Arc was a Negro. They have, they're trying to completely rewrite our history so that we end up thinking, oh, well, we're just a mongrel race just like them. So it's perfectly fine for us to interbreed with these other races. Jews will be at the front of calling for more immigration. They will always be, and they've even admitted that that is their sole purpose. A big Jewish lobby group in America a couple of years back, they said the two most important things for all Jewish lobby groups in America is, one, open borders. We must allow as much immigration as possible. And two, we must keep America looking out for Israel's interests. And yet, if you look at the country of Israel itself, they won't allow any immigrants in there. They won't allow Arabs in there. And funnily enough, they now say that Jews can't marry out. They have to marry other Jews. But that's not so that they can keep their blood pure. That's so that they can keep the nation Jewish, because they are mixed race. They don't want their people marrying out into other nations and becoming known as these other nations, as citizens of these other nations, which has happened in the past. But they only make up a small percentage of the population, and yet they have such a massive hand in every aspect of society. It's completely disproportionate to their tiny percentage that they are of the population. And just recently, we saw the influence that Jews have with Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party and the British Board of Jews, the British Board of Deputies, they call it, British Jewish Board of Deputies or something ridiculous like that. And they made all these demands of Jeremy Corbyn, telling Jeremy Corbyn who he had to sack, who he had to appoint, how he had to go about doing things, how he had to make the whole of the Labour Party just concerned with stopping criticism of Jews and Israel. And he had to agree to doing all of that before they would meet him. And any other group in society making all these demands, that Jeremy Corbyn would just say, well, you can wait then. I'm not going to, you know, why the hell should I meet you and give you all these demands before I even meet you? So it's quite clear this elevated role in society that they play. It's quite fine for them to have Jewish lobby groups. It's quite fine for them to have to have organized ethnic solidarity and call it a charity and receive money from the government. And it's quite fine for the Jews to have their own police force. They've got their Shomrim. Funnily enough, the rest of the country aren't allowed to dress up and impersonate police, but the Jews are. And with the blessing of the British police force as well. It's one law for one and another law for the others. Another part of the Jewish subversion of our society is against free speech. They came up with the supposed anti-Semitism laws, which is basically just criticizing Jews, and they've made it illegal to criticize Jews. That's what anti-Semitism is. It just means criticizing Jews. So they've been agitating for that for a long time. They've managed to get their laws against anti-Semitism, and they've managed to pathologize it. The way they talk about it is as if it's a virus, as if it's something that Gentiles are just born with. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with Jewish actions. It's just some of these Gentiles suddenly have this illness, this anti-Semitic illness. That's the way that it's been put across. Where the fact of the matter is, it's just criticism of Jews. And again, we see this is a different thing, and the Jews want it to be treated as a different thing. And we can see that by looking again at the Labour Party recently. Every time Jeremy Corbyn gets accused of anti-Semitism, he says, well, the Labour Party are against racism in all its forms. And the Jews hate that. They absolutely hate that, because criticizing Jews has to be seen as separate, has to be seen as more important than anti-racism. We can't just say, well, we're not going to discriminate against anyone. We have to specifically say we are not going to be discriminating against Jews, and criticism of Jews specifically has to get people sent to prison. And that's what the Jews are demanding. And it's quite clear that is what's going on when you see that we do have two laws. I mean, why would you have a specific law against criticizing Jews and then another law saying, well, you can't criticize any races? And as we know, it doesn't apply to white people. They can criticize white people all they like. They can talk about white privilege. They can talk about how white people hate everybody else. They can call us names. They can advertise specifically for non-whites and say that no whites can apply for this job. And yet, if we point out that is discrimination against white people, nothing whatsoever will get done about it. So both of these laws, the anti-racism ones and the anti-Semitism ones, were both brought about by Jews. And the reason why they like to have immigration is because they don't stand out so much then. Before we had blacks and browns in our nations, it was much easier to tell who was Jewish. Much, much easier. And if you fill a country up with brown, black, brown and yellow people, people get used to seeing all this difference, the differences. And the Jews then look more similar to white people. So it helps the Jews to blend into the country that they are in, and then they feel safer as this outsider. And it's much easier for them to con the Gentiles into thinking that the person that is telling them this, that they're seeing on the television or the politician, it's much easier for them to convince the Gentiles that they are actually white. And if you're not involved in nationalism and you see these people on the television, most people, that the thought would never enter their mind that they weren't white, that these Jews weren't white. And this brings me to another fact. Some people may think that Jews are white. A lot of people on the left that are against Israel, they think that Jews are white. So they see it as white privilege. So they see that what the Jews are doing, and they see that as white privilege and white racism. And it's not, it's Jews. And the Jews will play both sides. If it's in their best interest to claim to be white, they will pretend to be white. Such as when they say, whites like me, or whites like us, when it's a Jew. And they are talking about white privilege and how racist whites are. And yet, when they are claiming persecution, they'll be saying, well, we are non-white. Don't forget, we are non-white, and we have our solidarity with the non-white races. And the rabbis are quite clear about this. And there's been quite a few articles where rabbis have been reminding Jews that they are not white, and they must not forget that they are different to white people. And the reason why they're not white is because they're mixed, because they're mongrelized. They may have fair skin. They may have blonde hair. They may have blue eyes. But they're still Jews because they're mixed. And the closest race to them is the Arabs. And again, the Arabs are mixed. That's what a Semite is. It means somebody that speaks a Semitic language. And the area where these Semitic languages were spoken was full of Arabs. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with being descended from Shem in the Bible. It's just people that speak a Semitic language. And it's the same with the Latins. Well, the Latins of South America, they all, in the majority, are mongrelized. That's why they call them Latins. It's not really a definition of what their ethnicity is. It's a definition of the language that they use. They're not Romans. They're not descended from Romans. But they all speak a Latin language, so they're called Latinos. And Jews and Arabs, the languages that they speak that go back to Yiddish is what the Jews speak. But the language that the Arabs speak, that didn't really come about until the 6th century, or at least when they wrote it down. So there really isn't that much of a history of the Jews' language that they use today and the Arabs' language that they use today. But it is because of the links between them that they are called Semites, and that's where we get the term Semitic from. But it's not an entirely accurate way to describe them. The much better way to describe it is like British, descended from King Brutus. That's why we are called British. Anglo-Saxon, English, descended from the Angles, and the Angles and the Saxons. Is a specific ethnic term for these people, rather than being named after the language that they used. A patriarchal name is much better than being named after the language that you use. So we cannot allow Jews in the movement. We cannot allow interbreeding with Jews. We cannot allow non-whites into the movement. And we cannot allow breeding with non-whites, and we cannot allow people with a small amount of non-white blood into the movement, specifically because they are the most dangerous ones of the lot, because people will mistake them for white, they'll end up breeding with them, and their offspring won't be white. And that is clearly what happened in India. What you've got in India now, you've got the high castes left, and the high caste, the Brahmin class, is they have a very light skin, but they're not white. They have a light skin, but they're not white. And they're just the ones that didn't breed with the dark-skinned Dravidians and the dark-skinned Muslims so much. They managed to hold out as much as they could in the end. But if you allow non-whites into nationalism, that's what the country is going to end up like. It's just going to end up looking like India, and we're all going to end up shitting in the streets. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back on Monday with more of this Back to Basics series. Until then, I hope you all have a great weekend. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.